Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Esther chapter 7. I'll call this chapter, Haman is Hanged. Our context is this. In chapter 6, we see King Xerxes honoring Mordecai because he found out that Mordecai had saved him from an assassination plot by Bigthan and Teresh, and he had not gotten honored for it. He asked Haman, what should I do to honor this man, the man who needs honor? And Haman thought that the king was talking about himself, and so he said, well, you need to put a horse, put a robe on him, put a crown on him, parade him around in the city and show him great honor. And so Xerxes said, fine, we'll do that. And so Haman has already realized that things are not good because the same Jew he was trying to get killed is now being walked around the Susa, being paraded around in honor by Haman himself. And so in chapter 6, Haman has gone home. His wife and his friends say, you are cooked. Your downfall is certain because that Jew, Mordecai, that you plan to kill is now in great power. And he's not going to sit there and take it lightly that you tried to kill all the Jews. So you are history. Now Haman knew he had been invited to Esther's second banquet in the last verse of the last chapter. He is rushed off to the banquet, and that's where we are now in Esther 7, Esther's second banquet with Haman and the king. Now the king and Haman came to drink wine, as we start with verses 1 and 2. Now the king and Haman came to drink wine with Esther the queen. And the king said to Esther on the second day, also as they drank their wine at the banquet, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to half of the kingdom it shall be done. Now, when it says this is the second day that they were drinking wine at the banquet, this is referring to the fact that the first banquet had been held yesterday, that first banquet that Esther had with Xerxes and Haman. Now, Xerxes must have been busting out of his mind with curiosity. What is your petition, Queen Esther? You keep wanting to ask me something, but you're not asking. This is the third time that Xerxes has asked Esther what her request is. The first two are in chapter 5. The first one was at the king's throne room. In Esther 5:3, when Esther risked her life by going into the throne room uninvited, contrary to Persian law, Xerxes held out his golden scepter in forgiveness because he saw his beautiful wife there and she found favor with him. And he asked her there, what is it, Queen Esther? In verse 3, Esther 5, what is it? Whatever you want, even half the kingdom will be given to you. And then 3 verses later in Esther 5:6, we're at the first banquet, the banquet this yesterday. While drinking the wine, the king asked Esther, whatever you ask will be given to you. Whatever you want, even to half the kingdom, will be done. But Esther still didn't ask. She waited to the second banquet. So this is the third time that Xerxes is trying to find out what in the world does his wife want. Now notice that Xerxes is drinking wine at the banquet. Xerxes is much more likely to grant Esther's request when he's liquored up. Esther is one smart player in this drama, is she not? She teases Xerxes. She gets Haman there so she can denounce him alone with no courtiers present so that nobody can stand up for Haman when the accusation is made by Esther. And it's a pleasant occasion, people drinking wine. So Xerxes says, all right, Esther, even the half of the kingdom, I'll give it to you. And of course, that's a proverbial expression, not to be taken literally. Of course, he's not going to give half his kingdom to his queen. We go now to Esther 7, verses 3 through 4. Then Queen Esther replied, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me as my petition, and my people as my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Now, if we had only been sold as slaves, men and women, I would have remained silent, for the trouble would not be commensurate with the annoyance to the king. Now, Queen Esther is asking for her life. Now, notice how she makes it personal. She doesn't say, I want the life of my people to be granted to me as my request. Her life, she makes it personal. Again, she's a smart lady. It's very smart to do that because the king doesn't want to see his queen that he's very happy with. He doesn't want to see her killed, of course. Now, was it proper for Queen Esther to ask that? Yes, she's Jewish. And the edict had been sent out to kill all the Jews, so she was subject to death. Now, this must have surprised Xerxes. The usual request to a king is gold, silver, lands, government jobs, honors, and so forth. But no, she says, I want my life. Now, this is probably the first time that Xerxes. Well, Xerxes might not have even known that Esther was Jewish here. He might not have even knowing what she's referring to. What are you talking about? We've been sold to be destroyed, killed, and annihilated. So Xerxes is in a state of surprise here, I'm sure. And then Esther says further, she says, look, we've been ordered to be destroyed, killed, and annihilated. And those three words closely follow the words of Haman's edict. We read in Esther 3:13, same translation, New American Standard Bible, letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews. And so Esther copies that legal diction there and says, Xerxes, we've been ordered to be destroyed, killed, and annihilated. So she's copying what Haman had written. She repeats the offensive verbs using a variety of expressions, showing her deep emotions, meaning to arouse emotions in the king. Now, verse 4 causes us to spend a little energy interpreting it. Because there's two textual readings for it, let's take the reading in the NASB. She says, Queen, King Xerxes, if we Jews had only been sold as slaves, I wouldn't bother to remind you about it. I'd have kept quiet. For the trouble would not be commensurate with annoyance to the king. In other words, saving us Jews from slavery is not worth bothering you. Now, that's pretty humble, because to me, it would have been worth bothering the king about to save the Jews from slavery. Now, in my opinion, Queen Esther is just being extremely fawning here. You know, he's a Persian emperor. You got to fawn, you got to suck up to a Persian emperor, and that's what she's doing, in my opinion. But here's some other reasons that have been speculated as to why Esther could have reasonably remained silent if the edict had just been to put the Jews into slavery. First reason, slavery wouldn't have wiped the Jews out. Slavery, though painful and degrading, could have been endured. And so Esther says, well, I'm not going to risk my life by talking to the king and bothering him merely for degrading my people. I don't know about that. I think she might have risked her life for that, maybe. The NIV Study Bible says that another reason that she is saying that slavery wouldn't be worth the trouble to bother the king about is that slavery in the ancient world did not carry the same dread connotations as it does today. John Gill sort of goes along with that, and he says, look, if you're a slave, there's at least a chance of freedom. But then Gill tempers that remark by saying, well, but it is also said that Persian slaves were never freed, and I suspect that that's probably right, that a Persian slave would never be freed. It's not like Hebrew slavery. You got out after 7 years, after the sixth year. So I don't really think that that's a good reason for Esther to remain silent if the edict had said to enslave the Jews. And so she's saying, if you'd have been just a little bit easier, if your edict, King Xerxes, had been just a little bit easier on the Jews, I wouldn't have bothered you with this. But your request for death has put my back against the wall, and I've got to go for it here. Well, I still think she's just being hyperbolic here. I'd have been quiet if it had just been slavery. She's naming a hypothetical situation and exaggerating for effect, in my humble view. Now let's look at the alternate reading for this verse 4. This is from the King James. I would have remained silent, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Now, what in the world does that mean? Well, first of all, the enemy being referred to is Haman. How can Haman not countervail the king's damage? Well, the king's damage is the fact that all the dead Jews would not be able to pay taxes. And Haman, if you recall, in chapter 3, verse 9, had offered to pay Xerxes 10,000 talents of silver to counteract the king's loss from Jewish taxes. In Esther 3:9, we read this, if it is pleasing to the king, let it be decreed that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who carry on the king's business to put it into the king's treasuries. All right, so going back to the King James alternate reading, marginal reading, I would have been silent, says Queen Esther, although Haman could not pay you enough to overcome the damage to your treasury, which would have happened if you'd have killed all the Jews. To paraphrase that, she's saying, I would have remained silent to protect myself, even though it meant costing you money. The NIV note says, I would have been quiet, but the compensation our adversary offers, Haman, cannot be compared with the loss the king would suffer. In other words, if Haman had paid you enough, Xerxes, so that you wouldn't have had a financial loss, I would have been quiet, even though it would have meant the massacre of all the Jews. But since Haman has offered you a pathetic little amount of money compared to the money you're going to lose, I've got to say something to protect your treasury. I'm sorry, I don't buy that. I don't think that that's persuasive, that alternate reading. I think the main textual reading here makes much more sense. I would have been silent because I don't want to bother you if it had just been slaves, and that's just a hyperbolical way of speaking. It's not that she's saying I would have been silent, except you would have lost more money unless I speak up. Now, the fact that in verse 4, Esther even mentions slavery, now if we had only been sold as slaves, she mentions that as a hypothetical, that perhaps could show that Esther may have been hinting something to Xerxes. She might have been saying, why don't you commute the death sentence to slavery? Look how much tribute money you're going to lose. Again, if you take the alternate reading, as the NIV puts the alternate reading, the compensation our adversary offers cannot be compared with the loss the king would suffer. If you take that as to what Esther is saying, she's saying, look, you're going to lose so much. Why don't you just make them slaves? Dead Jews don't pay taxes. Well, arguing against that, slaves don't pay taxes either, but at least they can do some work, even though that work is not as productive as free labor. Well, all of that comes from trouble if you adopt that alternate reading. It's just much easier to take the textual reading here, and let me repeat it because I know you're probably confused by now. Esther says, look, Xerxes, I would have been quiet because to bother you, to annoy you, is not worth the trouble. To save my people from slavery is not worth bothering you, but I'm trying to save my people from dying. And so, yes, it is now worth the trouble to annoy you. We go now to Esther 7, 5 through 6. Then King Ahasuerus asked Queen Esther, who is he and where is he who would presume to do this? In other words, who wants to kill my queen? Esther said, a foe and an enemy is this wicked Haman. Remember, Haman's at the banquet. She points to him. Then Haman became terrified before the king and queen, as you can well imagine. Now we have a problem here. Why is Ahasuerus, Xerxes, why is he asking who sent that edict out to kill all the Jews? Xerxes had granted Haman's decree. Why is he asking who did it? We read in Esther 3, 8 through 10. Then Haman informed King Ahasuerus, there is one ethnic group scattered throughout the peoples in every province of your kingdom, yet living in isolation. Their laws are different from everyone else's, and they do not obey the king's laws. It is not in the king's best interest to tolerate them. If the king approves, let an order be drawn up authorizing their destruction, and I will pay 375 tons of silver, that's 10,000 talents, to the accountants for deposit in the royal treasury. Then the king removed his signet finger from his finger and gave it to Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jewish people. Well, Xerxes not only had heard the request for this anti-Jewish edict, he had given his signet ring to Haman to carry out the genocide. So now why is he asking, who is this that did this? Well, here's some solutions. Two possible answers to this. Perhaps Xerxes had just forgotten the decree, as Gill says. As king of the Persian Empire, the king had a lot of things he couldn't keep track of. He had already forgotten to honor Mordecai for uncovering the assassination plot, as we read in the last chapter. Remember, he couldn't sleep. He had the chronicles brought to him. He read that Bigthana and Teresh had tried to assassinate him, and that Mordecai had stopped it. And then he says, well, what did you give Mordecai for doing this? Nothing. You remember that from the last chapter. He forgot that. He forgot that Mordecai had not been honored for stopping the plot, so maybe he forgot this too. That's possible. But I think it's much more likely to adopt our second option here as to why he's asking who is trying to kill my queen. Xerxes was ignorant that Esther was a Jew until this moment. So when he signed that decree, or when he gave the signet ring to Haman to carry out that execution decree, Xerxes didn't realize that his own queen would be included in that execution decree. And right now, when Esther asked for her life, Xerxes abruptly realized that he's ordered his own queen's assassination. Now, Xerxes could have given some mercy to Haman. He could have said, well, Haman, you didn't know that Esther was Jewish any more than I did. So when you ordered all the Jews to be killed, you didn't mean to kill Queen Esther. But no, Xerxes doesn't react that way. He's ticked off. Now, of course, all this is speculation as to when Xerxes knew that Esther was Jewish, or when he knew that Mordecai was Jewish. All speculation. But that's reasonable speculation, I think. He's angry not because the Jews are going to be killed. He's angry not because he's going to lose some tax money. He's angry because his queen is going to get to be killed. And remember, the laws of the ancient Persians and Medians could not be revoked. Now, Adam Clark has an interesting comment on how it was that Xerxes asked this question, who was responsible for this death decree on my queen? Clark says this, quote, "There is a wonderful abruptness and confusion in the original words, highly expressive of the state of mind in which the king then was." And then Clark lists the Hebrew there, and he translates that Hebrew as in this way, "Who? He? This one? And where? This one? He? Who hath filled his heart to do this?" Which does sort of convey confusion and breathlessness and shock much better than our English translation does. So, when Haman gets fingered by Esther, he became terrified. Now, that might have been Haman's moment of recognition also that Esther was a Jew. He realized that he had just asked King Xerxes to decree to murder his own queen. And now the king has just found out about it, both in her presence and Haman's presence, and he is toast. He's had a bad couple of days. I mean, yesterday he finds out the man he's getting ready to kill, Mordecai, is to be honored above him. That's bad enough that a Jew is now in charge when he's tried to kill all the Jews, and now he finds out the queen's Jewish, and the edict that he sent out would kill the queen. Bad couple of days. We go now to Esther 7, verses 7 through 10, and we'll finish this chapter. The king arose in his anger from drinking wine and went into the palace garden. But Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that harm had been determined against him by the king. It didn't take a rocket scientist to know that. Now when the king returned from the palace garden into the place where they were drinking wine, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was. Then the king said, "Will he even assault the queen with me in the house?" As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs who were before the king, said, "Behold, indeed, the gallows standing at Haman's house 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on behalf of the king." And the king said, "Hang him on it." And that's where we get the expression, "He was hoisted on his own petard." Petard is a gallows. Hoisted on his own petard. It's been used for centuries in Western history. So they hanged Haman on the gallows which he had prepared for Mordecai, and the king's anger subsided. Now, when the king found out that Haman had decreed the execution of his queen, he arose. Jameson Fawcett Brown says, "The sudden rising of the king in anger was the same as if Xerxes had pronounced sentence." Because he's angry. You make the Persian emperor angry, you are toast. And Haman knew it. Now, why did he get up, Xerxes? Why did he get up and leave the banquet inside the palace, went out into the garden? A couple of options. Perhaps he was unable to bear the sight of Haman. He was so angry at him. Or maybe it was to calm himself down so he could calmly deliberate what he was going to do. Could have been both. Verse 7 says that Haman saw that harm had been determined against him. He saw the king's anger. That's how he saw that. He saw the rage on Xerxes' face. And he also saw that Xerxes had suddenly left the banquet. Why would he be leaving the banquet? Maybe to go out and find an executioner, maybe? But in verse 8, Xerxes returned. That's probably after his rage had subsided. And what does he see when he returns? He sees Haman falling on the couch where Esther was. Oh, my gosh. He had probably embraced Esther's knees in order to beg for mercy, as John Gill says, which in other circumstances would have been indecent. But obviously, he's not trying to sexually assault the queen. At this point, he's begging for his life. The king comes in and he sees Haman grabbing, well, perhaps, somehow on the couch, grabbing his queen's knees. And so Xerxes says, "Well, even assault the queen, that means sexually assault the queen right here in my house." The KJV has ravished the queen. The NIV has molested the queen. Now, Xerxes didn't really believe that Haman was molesting the queen, not at this stage. Hard to imagine that Haman would have sex on his mind at a time like this when he's been exposed, especially with the queen of Persia, especially at a banquet that Xerxes had been invited to. Would he be that bold? Especially since there were others who were executioners present. They're coming. So why did Xerxes say that? Well, in my opinion, he's just piling it on Haman. This jerk has tried to kill my queen, and now he's sexually assaulting her, which he didn't really believe. He's just trying to make him look bad. As Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say, Xerxes must have known that in such circumstances, the thought of perpetrating an act of this kind could not possibly exist. No, it couldn't. But it's great dramatic effect. As the word went out of the king's mouth as he said that, they covered Haman's face, because everybody knew that Haman was history now. Why did they cover his face? Adam Clark says it was a custom to cover the heads of one who's condemned to die. Adam Clark said that, and John Gill says that there are many examples in Greek and Roman history of people having their heads covered when they're about to die. Well, what is the symbolism of this? Well, a covered head means a dead man will not see light. Or it could be, we don't want the king to look at somebody who has made him so angry. John Gill says there's many examples of this in Persian writings. Whatever the symbolism is, dead men can't see, or Persian kings can't see me, whatever it is, Haman is carried out to his death. Verse 9, then Harbona, one of the eunuchs who were before the king, said, hey, I know where we can hang him. On the gallows that Haman has built the night before at his house. Now this Harbona is one of the seven big-shot eunuchs that are attending Xerxes. These seven eunuchs are mentioned in Esther 1 at the banquet where he offended his first queen, Vashti. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, this is Esther 1, verses 10 and 11, he commanded Mahuman, Biztha, Harbona, so there's the eunuch, Bigtha, Bagtha, Zethar, and Carcass. So he's one of the big seven eunuchs, the seven eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus. Now, he may have been one of the eunuchs who had fetched Haman to come to Esther's second banquet, who came to Haman's house while he's sitting there all miserable about Mordecai being elevated, and his wife and his friend says, you're toast, you're toast. And so we read in Esther 6:14, while they, Zeresh, the wife, and the friends were still talking with Haman, the king's eunuchs arrived and hastily brought Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. And when they arrived, they probably looked and said, what is that big gallows there for? And so Harbona took note of it. This is speculation, but it's reasonable. And so then the king says, hang him on it. And as the old expression is, hang him high as Haman. That's old-fashioned. People as old as me, you've heard that metaphor. Hang him high as Haman. That's when people knew the Bible as part of their culture. Not like today's God-forsaken. Well, it's not forsaken. Well, we've forsaken God, so I guess we could say God-forsaken. God-forsaken age where nobody knows the Bible. Even Christians don't know the Bible. Just saw a Pew poll. 36% of all American pastors do not have a biblical worldview. That's right. That's why I'm doing this podcast, so that somebody somewhere will end up with a biblical worldview. So they hanged Haman on the gallows, hoisted him on his own petard. Jamin Fawcett and Brown says, concerning this, quote, never was condemnation more just and retribution more merited than the execution of that gigantic criminal. I hope nobody feels sorry for what happened here. There might be some anti-capital punishment, wussy-pussy liberal evangelicals that might object, but their opinion means nothing to me. I just point out that what happened to Haman is similar to what happened to another person who desired to exterminate the Jews, that late German reformer Adolf Hitler. I don't feel bad that Adolf Hitler got killed in his bunker, and I don't feel bad that Haman was hung high. Ladies and gentlemen, on that happy note, we are now prepared to go to Esther 8, verses 1 through 17, and we will see how Esther saves the Jews. I hope you stay tuned for that remarkable occasion in our next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.